The Country Doctor by Ivan Turgenev. One autumn, on the way back from an outlying property, I caught a heavy chill. Luckily, I was in the local market town at the inn when the fever came on. I sent for the doctor. About half an hour after he appeared, a shortish, thinnish man with black hair. He prescribed the usual sudorific, ordered a mustard plaster to be applied, deftly tucked my 5-ruble note away up his sleeve, meanwhile coughing loudly, it is true, and averting his gaze, and was on the point of going home, when somehow or other he got talking and stayed on. I was oppressed by my fever. I foresaw a sleepless night, and was glad to have the chance of a talk with a good man. We had tea served. My friend, the doctor, let himself go. The little fellow was no fool. He had a lively and rather amusing way of expressing himself. It's strange how things happen in life. You live with someone for a long time. You are on the best of terms. Yet you never once speak to them frankly and from the heart. With someone else you've hardly even got acquainted, and there you are, as if at confession, one or other of you is blurting out all his most intimate secrets. I do not know what I did to deserve the confidence of my new friend. Anyway, for no particular reason, he got going, as they say, and told me a rather remarkable story, which I will relate here for the benefit of my courteous reader. I will try to express myself in the doctor's own words. "You don't happen to know," he began in a voice that had grown suddenly faint and trembling, such as the effect of unadulterated birch snuff. "You don't happen to know our local judge, Pavel Lukich Mylov. You don't... Well, it doesn't matter." He cleared his throat and wiped his eyes. "Anyway, this is the story. Let me see now. To be exact, it was in Lent, at the time of the thaw. I was sitting at the judge's, playing preference. Our judge is a capital fellow and a great hand at preference. Suddenly," this was a word that the doctor often used, "a message comes up that someone is looking for me. I say, 'What does he want?' He's brought a note, doubtless from a patient. 'Give me the note,' I say. 'Yes, it's from a patient.' 'Well, all right, you know it's our daily bread.' 'The note is from a landowner's widow. She says, "My daughter is dying. For God's sake, come. I've sent horses to fetch you." Well, that's all right. But the lady lives 20 versts from town, and night's upon us, and the roads are in such a state, my word! And the lady herself is not so well off as she was. 2 silver rubles is the most you can expect, and even that is doubtful. Perhaps all that I shall get out of it will be a piece of linen and a little flour. However, duty first, you know. Someone's dying." At once I pass my hand to Councillor Kalipion and return home. I see a small cart standing outside my porch. Real peasant's horses. Enormous pork bellies, and woolly hair as thick as felt, and a coachman sitting bareheaded as a sign of respect. "Well, my friend, I think it's plain that your masters don't eat off gold plates." "You, sir, you may well smile, but I tell you, we are poor men in our profession, and we have to notice all these things. If the coachman sits up like a prince and doesn't take off his cap, if he sniggers at you in his beard and toys with his whip, you can rely on a couple of 5-ruble notes. But this turnout here is a very different pair of shoes. Well, I think it can't be helped. Duty first." I grab the essential medicines and off I go. Believe me, it was all we could do to get there. The road was hellish. Streams, snow, mud, ravines. Then suddenly a burst dam. Chaos. At last, I'm there. A little house with a thatched roof. The windows are lit up. They must be waiting for me. A dignified little old lady in a cap comes to meet me. Shit. I'm lost my place. Save her, she says. She is dying. I say, pray calm yourself. Where is the patient? Here, please come this way. I see a small, clean room, an oil lamp in the corner. On the bed, a girl of about 20, unconscious. Heat fairly blazing from her, breathing heavily. A high fever. There are two other girls there too, her sisters, badly scared and in tears. Yesterday, they say, she was perfectly well and had a good appetite. This morning she complained of a headache, and then suddenly in the evening she became like this. I repeat again, pray calm yourselves. It's part of the doctor's job, you know. And I set to work. I bleed her. Order mustard plasters. I prescribe a mixture. Meanwhile, I look at her. I look and look. My goodness, never have I seen such a face before. An absolute beauty. I feel so sorry for the girl, it fairly tears me to pieces. Such lovely features, such eyes. At last, thank God, she gets more comfortable. She begins to sweat, partly recovers consciousness, looks around, smiles, passes her hand over her face. The sisters bend over and ask, what's the matter? Nothing, she says, and turns her head away. I look. She's dropped off to sleep. Well, I say, now we must leave the patient in peace. We all tiptoe out. Only the maid stays behind in case of emergencies. In the sitting room, the samovar's on the table and a bottle of rum beside it. In our job, we can't get along without it. They gave me tea. They asked me to stay the night. I accepted. Where else could I go at that hour? The old lady keeps up a steady groaning. What's the matter? I ask. She'll live. Calm yourself and go to bed. It's 2 o'clock. You'll have me woken up if anything happens. Of course I will. The old lady retired, and the girls went up to their rooms. A bed was put up for me in the drawing room. I lay down but couldn't get to sleep, strangely enough. You'd have thought that I'd worried my head enough already. But I couldn't get my patient out of my head. Finally, I could stand it no longer, and all of a sudden I got up. I thought I'd just go and see how she was. Her bedroom adjoined the dining room. Well, I got up and quietly opened the door, and my heart was fairly beating away. I saw the maid asleep with her mouth open, snoring away like an animal, and the patient lying with her face towards me, her arms moving restlessly, poor girl. I went up to her, and suddenly she opened her eyes and stared at me. Who are you? I felt awkward. Don't be afraid, I said. I am the doctor. I've come to see how you feel. You're the doctor? Yes, I am. Your mother sent me from town. We've bled you, and now, please, you must rest. And in 2 days' time, with God's help, we shall have you up and about. Oh, yes, yes, doctor, don't let me die. Please, please. Good heavens, whatever next? But, I thought to myself, the fever is on her again. I felt her pulse. I was right. She looked at me, and suddenly she took me by the hand. I'll tell you why I don't want to die. I'll tell you, now that we are alone. Only not a word. Please, just listen. I bent over her. Her lips moved right against my ear. Her hair touched my cheek. I admit it, my head went round in circles, and she began to whisper. I didn't understand a word. Oh, of course, she must be delirious. She whispered and whispered, but so quickly, as if in a foreign language. And when she had done, she shuddered, dropped her head on a pillow and raised a finger at me. Listen, doctor, not a word. Somehow or other, I calmed her, gave her a drink, woke the maid, and went out. The doctor took another violent pinch of snuff and sat stock still for a moment. Anyhow, he continued, next day, contrary to my expectations, the patient was no better. I thought and thought and suddenly decided to stay on, although I had other patients waiting for me. You know, one shouldn't neglect them. It is bad for one's practice. But, in the first place, the girl was really desperately ill. And secondly, to tell the truth, I felt myself strongly attracted to her. Besides, I liked the whole family. Although they were very hard up, they were extraordinarily cultivated people. The father had been a scholar, a writer. He died a poor man, of course, but he managed to give his children an excellent education. He left them a lot of books, too. Whether it was because I put my whole heart into looking after the patient, or whether there were other reasons, anyway, I'd go so far as to say they came to love me in that house like one of their own family. Meanwhile, the thaw got worse and worse. Communications were completely broken. I could hardly even get medicines sent out from town. The girl got no better. Day after day, day after day. But then, well, the doctor paused. The truth is that I don't know how to explain it to you. He took another pinch of snuff, sneezed and swallowed a gulp of tea. I'll tell you straight out, my patient, how shall I put it, fell in love with me, I suppose. Or rather, she wasn't exactly in love, but anyway, it certainly... The doctor looked down and blushed. No, he continued with some animation, love is the wrong word. One must see oneself at one's worth, after all. She was a cultivated, intelligent, well-read girl, and I... Well, I'd even forgotten my Latin, more or less completely. My figure, too, and the doctor looked at himself with a smile, is nothing to boast about, I think. But God didn't make me a fool, either. I don't call white black. I've got a mind that works at times. For instance, I understood very well that what Alexandra Alexandrovna, that was her name, felt towards me was not love, but affection, so to speak, regard or what not. Although she herself probably misread her feelings towards me, her condition was such, as you can imagine. Anyhow, added the doctor, who had uttered all these disjointed statements without drawing breath and with obvious embarrassment, I think I've let my tongue run away with me, and the result is you won't understand what happened. So, I'll tell you the story in its proper order. He finished his glass of tea and resumed in a calmer voice. This is how it went. My patient continued to get worse and worse. You, my good sir, are not a doctor. You have no idea what goes on inside a doctor's head, especially in his early days, when it dawns on him that a patient's illness is defeating him. All his self-assurance vanishes into thin air. I can't tell you how scared he gets. It seems to him that he's forgotten everything he ever knew, that his patient has no confidence in him, that other people are beginning to notice that he's out of his depths and don't want to describe the patient's symptoms, that they are looking at him strangely and whispering, "Oh, it's terrible!" He feels there must be some way of treating it, if only time for the treatment to take its proper effect. He snatches first at one method, then at another. He takes up his book of prescriptions. Here it is, he thinks. This is it. To be quite honest, sometimes he opens the books at random. This, he thinks, must be the hand of fate. Meanwhile, there is someone dying, someone whom another doctor would have saved. I must have another opinion, you think. I can't take the whole responsibility myself. But what you say to yourself, never mind. The patient has died. It's not your fault. You only followed the rules. But what disturbs you still more is this. When other people have blind confidence in you, and all the time you know you're helpless. It was exactly such confidence that all Alexandra Alexandrievna's family felt toward me. They no longer even thought of her as in danger. And I, on my side, was assuring them that there was nothing to worry about, but really my heart was in my boots. To make things even worse, the thaw became so bad that the coachman spent whole days fetching medicines. Meanwhile, I never left the patient's room. I simply couldn't tear myself away. I told her all sorts of funny stories. I played cards with her. I spent the nights at her bedside. The old lady would thank me with tears in her eyes, but I thought to myself, I don't deserve your gratitude. I confess to you frankly, there is no reason why I should conceal it now. I was in love with my patient, and Alexandra Andreevna grew fonder and fonder of me. She would allow no one in her room except me. We would get talking. She would ask me where I studied, what sort of life I led, about my parents and my friends. And I felt we shouldn't be talking. But to stop her really firmly, was more than I could do. I would bury my head in my hands. What are you doing, scoundrel? And then she would take my hand and hold it. Look at me for a long, long time. Turn away, sigh, and say how good you are. Her hands were so feverish, her eyes so big and languid. Yes, she would say, you're a good, kind man. You're not like our neighbours. You're quite, quite different. To think that I never knew you until now. Alexandra Andreevna, calm yourself, I said. Believe me, I appreciate it. I don't know what I've done to... Only calm yourself, for heaven's sake. Calm yourself. Everything will be all right. You'll get quite well again. By the way, I must tell you, added the doctor, leaning forward and lifting his eyebrows, that they had little to do with their neighbours because the smaller people weren't up to them and they were too proud to get to know the richer ones. I tell you, it was an extraordinarily cultivated family, so that, for me, it was quite flattering. Alexandra would only take her medicine from my hands. The poor girl would lift herself up with my help, swallow the medicine, and gaze at me. And my heart would fairly turn over. But all the time, she was getting worse and worse. She will die, I thought. She will surely die. Believe me or not, I would gladly have lain in the coffin instead of her. But there were her mothers and sisters watching me, looking into my eyes, and I could feel their confidence on the rein. Well, how is she? Nothing to worry about, nothing at all. But what did I mean, nothing at all? My head was in a daze. There I was one night, alone as usual, sitting at the bedside. The maid was sitting in the room too, snoring for all she was worth. Well, one couldn't find fault with the poor girl. She too was quite exhausted. Alexandra had been feeling very bad the whole evening. The fever gave her no rest. Right up to midnight, she had been tossing away. At last she seemed to fall asleep. At any rate, she stopped moving and lay still. The oil lamp was burning in the corner in the front of the icon. I sat there, my head dropped forward, you know, and I too dozed off. Suddenly, it was as if someone had given me a push in the ribs. I looked around. God almighty! Alexandra was staring at me wide-eyed, her lips parted, her cheeks aflame. What is it? Doctor, am I going to die? For heaven's sake. No, please, doctor, please don't tell me that I'm going to live. Don't tell me that, if only you knew. Listen, for God's sake, don't try to hide my condition from me. I noticed how quick she was breathing. If I can know for sure that I am going to die, then I can tell you everything I have to say. Alexandra Andreevna, for mercy's sake. Listen, I haven't slept a wink. I've been looking and looking at you. For God's sake, I trust you. You're kind. You're honest. I implore you, by everything that's holy on earth, tell me the truth. If only you knew how much it matters to me. Doctor, tell me, for God's sake, am I in danger? What can I tell you, Alexandra Andreevna? For God's sake, I beseech you to tell me. Alexandra Andreevna, I can't hide the truth from you. You are in danger, but God is merciful. I'm going to die. I'm going to die. And it was as if she was overjoyed at the thought, her face lit up so. I was fairly terrified. Never fear, never fear, death has no terror for me. All of a sudden, she raised herself on one shoulder. Now I can tell you that I'm grateful to you from all my heart, that you're good and kind, that I love you. I looked at her like a man possessed. I can tell you I had quite a creepy feeling. Listen to me. I love you. Alexandra Andreevna, what have I done to deserve this? No, you don't understand me, my dear one. And suddenly she reached out, took my head in her hands, and kissed me. Believe me or not, it was all I could do not to cry out loud. I fell on my knees and hid my head in the pillow. She said nothing. Her fingers trembled on my hair. I could hear her crying. I began to comfort her, to assure her. I really don't know what I said to her. You'll wake the maid. Believe me when I say how grateful I am, and calm yourself. Don't, she kept repeating. Never mind any of them. Let them wake. Let them come. It doesn't signify. I'm dying anyway. Why are you so shy and timid? Lift your head. Or can it be that you don't love me, that I was mistaken? If that is so, please forgive me. What are you saying? I love you, Alexandra Andreevna. She gazed at me, straight in the eyes, and opened her arms. Then, put your arms around me. I tell you honestly, I don't know how I got through that night without going out of my mind. I knew that my patient was killing herself. I saw that she was half delirious. I also understood that if she had not believed herself on the point of death, she would never have given me a thought. But, say what you like, there must be something appalling about dying at 25 without ever having loved. That was the thought that tormented her. That was why, in despair, she seized on me. Now do you see it all? She still held me tightly in her arms. Half pity on me, Alexandra Andreevna. Half pity on us both, I said. Why? She answered. What is there to pity? Don't you understand that I've got to die? She kept on repeating this phrase. If I knew that I was going to live and turn into a well-brought-up young lady again, I should be ashamed. Yes, ashamed. But as it is... And who told you that you were going to die? Oh, no, enough of that. You can't deceive me. You don't know how to lie. Just look at yourself. You will live, Alexandra Andreevna. I will cure you. We will ask your mother for her blessing. Nothing will part us. We shall be happy. No, I have your word that I must die. You promised me. You told me I must. It was a bitter moment for me, bitter for many reasons. You know, sometimes small things can happen. They amount to nothing, but they hurt all the same. It occurred to her to ask me my name, my Christian name, I mean. Of course, it would be my ill luck to be called Trifon. Yes, sir. Trifon Ivanich. In the house, all the family called me doctor. Well, there was nothing for it, so I answered, Trifon. She screwed her eyes up, shook her head, and whispered something in French. Oh, it was something unflattering, and she laughed unkindly, too. Well, like this, I spent almost the whole night with her. At dawn I went out like one possessed. It was midday when I returned to her room after taking tea. God Almighty, you couldn't recognize her. I've seen prettier sights laid out in the coffin. Upon my word, I don't know to this day, I simply don't know how I stood the ordeal. For 3 days and three nights my patient's life still flickered on. And what nights they were. What things she told me. On the last night of the three, just fancy, I was sitting beside her, praying now for one thing only. Oh God, take her quickly, and take me as well. When suddenly the old lady, her mother, burst into the room. I had already told her the day before that there was little hope, that things were bad, and that it would be well to send for the priest. As soon as she saw her mother, the sick girl said, I'm glad that you've come. Look at us, we love each other. We are pledged to each other. What's she saying, doctor? What is she saying? I went pale as death. She's delirious, I said. It's the fever. But then, from Alexandra, enough of that. Just now you spoke to me quite differently and accepted my ring. Why pretend? My mother is kind, she will forgive, she will understand. But I am dying. Why should I lie? Give me your hand. I jumped up and ran from the room. Of course, the old lady guessed the whole story. Anyway, I won't attempt to bore you further, and what's more, to tell you the truth, it hurts me to remember. The following day my patient passed away. May God rest her soul, added the doctor hurriedly with a sigh. Before she died, she asked that everyone should go out and leave me alone with her. Forgive me, she said. Perhaps I've acted wrongly towards you. It's my illness, but believe me, I've never loved anyone more than you. Don't forget me. Treasure my ring. The doctor turned away. I seized him by the hand. Oh, he said, let's talk about something else, or perhaps you'll like a little game of preference for low stakes. You know, in our profession, we should never give way to such exalted sentiments. In our profession, all we should think about is how to stop children from yelling and the wife from nagging. For, since then, I have gone in for holy matrimony, as they call it, with a vengeance. I married a merchant's daughter. 7,000 rubles dowry. Her name is Aculina. It's on par with Trifon. A spiteful hag, I must say, but luckily she sleeps all day. What about that game of preference? We've got down to preference for kopeck stakes. Trifon Ivinich won 2.5 rubles from me, and went home late, very pleased with his victory.